journey through the stories that define the artists playing Bonnaroo. Who are they? What are they? What will you see? The what? Which bands? This year, that matter. Yay. With Brad Steiner and Barry Corder.
You know, Barry Corder, love can be found in so many strange places in life. Rest stop bathrooms, workplaces, the grocery store and a chance encounter, or backstage at Camp Nut Butter.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
In the middle of a Tennessee summer in 2018.
I was thinking driving over here, Brad.
Yeah.
The power that the What podcast has.
Yeah. What's that? How's that?
These guys, nobody knew who they were.
Oh, is that right? Yeah.
Teeny tiny.
Yeah.
They come to our camp at Nut Butter. They come out of Bonnaroo and suddenly everybody wants them.
The thing about love is that it creeps up so quickly and then it hits you like a ton of bricks and it doesn't let go and it's there with you for the rest of your lives. And that's how we feel about the guest that we have set up for today. The very first ever repeat guest on the What podcast, ironically enough,
repeating
is repeat, repeat.
Repeat, repeat.
Yes. All right, let's start off by telling you who we are. I'm Brad Steiner from WDOD Radio in Chattanooga, Tennessee. That's Barry Corder from the Chattanooga Times Free Press. This is the What Podcast, a podcast that focuses on the bands that matter this year, primarily the play of Bonnaroo, a podcast by Bonnarooians for Bonnarooians. Even if you're not a Bonnaroovian, we appreciate you checking us out. Listen to some of the others that you may or may not care about. We've got some good shows back there. If you want to stumble through a few of them and check out some history along the way of our other artists that we've talked about or other Bonnaroo tips that we've given, festival tips, etc. One of the episodes you can go back and listen to is a show that we did live on this live on site of Bonnaroo last year. It was the very first ever, I think, I mean, I've been there for a long time, first ever backstage podcast interview of a Bonnaroo podcast in the history of Bonnaroo last year.
I think you're probably right. I don't know who could prove us otherwise.
You know what? It's sort of like Donald Trump. It really doesn't matter. I can say whatever I want.
We stumbled across them, right, with Bonnaroulette.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, last year.
It was one of our Bonnaroulette finds and then reached out and ask him to join us back in camp. And we found out, I'm sure we'll talk to Jared about it when we speak, but their motto is yes. They are the most agreeable, what's the word, accessible
yeah.
people that I've ever dealt with.
Ever.
And,
ever.
And we just like them.
Yeah, that's the other thing, too. It's amazing what the power, and look, there's a common theme when it comes to repeat, repeat. It's not just yes, but it's also love, right?
Absolutely.
It starts from a place of absolute 100% love between Kristen and Jared, who are a husband and wife who lead the band, and what they're willing to do for you. It's yeah. all from them loving each other, them loving their product, and them loving you as the person who's investing in their product.
I think we made fun of them, didn't we, during that podcast, because they're so lovey-dovey.
They are
it's
all
disgusting.
Over each other. All over each other. And look,
we thought they were newlyweds.
Spent plenty of time with them since then. They're always like this.
They're just happy people, and it was we had a ball. I mean, yeah. they came back and visited with us, and then pretty soon we were swapping craft beers, and
sure.
then they were back and visiting some more. And
yeah, let's set the table a little bit and start over so that you understand what we're going for here. Now we know that Repeat Repeat not playing Bonnaroo this year, but when I talked to Jared the other day, and he told me what his plan was for insert new album and their new single. We immediately said, well, you need to come back and talk to us about the new project, because A, not only is it damn good, but it's also, he's got a lot of perspective when it comes to Bonnaroo. Yes. I love their Bonnaroo story, because we talked about them in the Bonnaroo Let show from last year. We stumbled upon Girlfriend as a song that we really liked. We went to the show. We really, really liked the show. We talked to them before their show, backstage at our camp, and they were unbelievably gracious. They right. couldn't have been nicer. They sat there for 45 minutes in our dirty, rotten camp, and
then we were swapping phone numbers.
Yeah, and then it became like a friendship. And talking to him subsequently in the months after Bonnaroo, I will never forget. I sat down at dinner with him. It was the wife's birthday, and we all had a birthday dinner. He looked me in the eye and said, "That Bonnaroo show changed our lives."
That's where I thought we were going. Yeah, that and I joke a little bit about the power of this podcast, but that Bonnaroo for them and for other bands, but they're the ones that we know of specifically. Playing a show like that, can change your career.
Mm-hmm.
And it did for them.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to talk about not only the new record, but who produced it.
Yeah,
all of that comes out of the excitement that was generated. Walk the Moon, similar
right. you
know, instance
with right.
that first Bonnaroo experience. That type of thing can, it puts a band in front of a lot of people. It puts a band in front of media.
Yeah.
Legitimizes, whatever you want to call it, it can be that springboard. And,
right.
and it certainly seems to have been for these guys.
And we're going
to
jump into some of the stuff that they did on site with Jared when he gives us a call here in a second. But I want to, before we do that, I want to give a little bit of backstory to when they were backstage at Bonnaroo last year. I've never, ever seen an artist more.
Yeah.
They were everywhere.
Every time you turned a corner.
Every single day they were there hustling,
yeah.
talking to every piece of press. They literally, there was not somebody that they would say, and you said it earlier, yes, they would not say no to anybody. I kept asking, Jared, Kristen, you guys gonna, what show are you gonna go do? Well, we'd love to go see it, but we're gonna go talk to Dumbledore Magazine.
Yeah, yeah.
Hang on 1 second, they'll be back there in an hour.
Well, it'd be Dumbledore once, and then the day after they talked to us, was it Rolling Stone?
Rolling right? Stone calls him. Yeah, and then Billboard.
Rolling Stone found out we had talked to him.
Yeah,
that's
I'm
the
sure.
way I'm telling it.
Yeah, it's just, it's amazing because, I mean, if you, not only do we have Bonnaroo listeners or Bonnaroo fans that listen to this, but we also have musicians. If you need a crash course on the way to get your name out there, follow Repeat Repeat's model, because as people who do this for a living, there's nothing we love more than an easy get.
Absolutely.
We need easy gets. And Repeat Repeat, not going to lie, was an easy get because they said yes. We didn't know why they said yes. We
right.
didn't even know who they were.
Right.
But because they said yes,
right.
because we
just... We've never done a podcast from camp. But that would be a novel
sure.
idea, and they just were the first ones. Yeah,
and because
absolutely.
And because we hit it off, I will be a fan. I will prop them up, and I'll do anything that I can for the rest of my career. If you are a musician, take that to note. Take yeah. that piece of advice that Repeat Repeat is giving you, and do it. Just do that playbook, because you never know when you're going to make a contact that could do something for you.
Absolutely. The only thing that I like as much as the easy get is following an act.
From birth. Right.
To superstardom and all the way through. I love that. I don't. To me, that's the fun part of the job.
Yeah.
And I remember when we spoke at Camp Nut Butter with them about this, yes being their motto, they play just as hard for one person.
That's right.
In a small club as forever. I mean, they are serious about yes. That's their motto. You never know that one person might be that guy or one of you
that's
know,
right.
four people.
Now, we're not that guy.
We're not that guy.
We're not that guy. But you just don't, you never
right.
know.
You never know.
So hopefully we'll talk to Jared and Kristen from Repeat Repeat here in a second. Definitely got Jared. I don't know if Kristen's going to join us. I know they're very busy this weekend with their big single being released and the subsequent steps that their career takes after this album drops in a couple of weeks. But we also have a very special guest. We're trying to incorporate you, the podcast listener, each and every week. And this week we've uncovered a guy that's got a pretty fun story.
Yeah. Brandon Best reached out. He's from Flint, Michigan, paramedic professionally. So we thought it'd be kind of fun to get his perspective mm-hmm. and tips
yeah.
on how to do a festival like this. We now know that we need to look up and try to order some banana sacks.
Yeah, right. Hey, that's not Barry talking dirty.
Right, right. It's not underwear.
You'll understand more here in a bit. Plus, we've got a little bit of homework for you, the What Podcast listener, for next week's show that we will talk about here in a second. But first, let's talk to Jared and or Kristen from Repeat Repeat.
We're great. How are you?
What are you guys up to? Are you in the van right now?
Yeah, it's yeah. awesome. We're driving through the woods.
So before we start, just to paint a picture of where you guys are, you're leaving the house, which is this palatial estate in northern Nashville with the whole Repeat family in the most amazing van I've ever sat in my life. Please explain how great this van is.
Well, it has several benches. We call it the Chateau Lobby, based off of Father John Misty's song. It's got a couch in the back and an ottoman and tapestry curtains and about 200 buttons. Every time we get a button from a show, we put it in the roof of the van. So trying to make a little button museum.
Nice.
Excellent.
Yeah. A whole button museum. From the places and the people that you have seen before, one of which being Bonnaroo, 2018. Now, before we get into how amazing your life is today and how amazing it's going to be in the future, let's talk about before Bonnaroo and the conversations that we've had maybe before, but not necessarily in this format. The show that you guys had before Bonnaroo, the band that you had before Bonnaroo, and then the show at Bonnaroo and what happened in the immediate aftermath. Explain, you know, what that whole process was like.
And guys, I need you to confirm, because I claim that it's being on this podcast, which coincidentally happened during Bonnaroo, that actually launched you guys. So I need you to confirm that for everybody.
Consider that confirmed.
Yeah, I think when we started the band prior to Bonnaroo, you know, we were like lost in the desert. And then we came and we did y'all's podcast, and now our eyes have been opened. I feel like we've become better songwriters because of it.
Yeah, right.
I feel like our comedic timing is better.
Oh, sure.
And, you know,
grass is a little greener, sky's a little bluer.
Yeah, the food tastes sweeter.
The shirt has gotten more stripes on it, and somehow,
yeah.
How's that possible?
Yeah, it's like so many stripes.
Has its own family of baby stripes now. Everything is
blocked. Yeah, it's really exciting. But also, that could have also just been heat stroke.
Sure, exactly.
But honestly, before Bonnaroo, we were working our way up the ladder, that is the music industry, and we always are, we still are, we're never not improving, but I think there was a moment when we got on stage at our show on Sunday. Well, we knew what to expect a little bit because we played Thursday night for the Rue Bus, which if Wednesday night, I'm
yeah.
sorry, if you're
yes.
like a Bonnaroo veteran, if you want to see what like the Rue vets do, go on Wednesday night and go to the Rue Bus and go party with them. And we got to play on the farm that night. And honestly, we were the first band to play all of Bonnaroo last year because no other bands played Wednesday night. So we got to play out in the campground. And that kind of gave us a taste of what to expect the whole weekend. And then we were just surrounded by the energy and the magical power of Bonnaroo all the rest of the weekend. And then we got to play our official show on Sunday. And I feel like we walked off the stage a different band. And I think people took notice. I know Rolling Stone took notice.
Yep.
And, you know, it's not been the same since, frankly.
That's awesome. That's awesome. It's the power of a festival that you guys had wanted to be a part of for so long, too, right?
Oh, absolutely. It was sort of one of those things that we knew we were reaching for, and, you know, we thought that we could get there, but also it seemed like this far off land that, you know, was maybe even pretend.
It was part of the reason I moved to Nashville.
No way.
Because I knew three things. I didn't know a single person when I moved to Nashville at all. I didn't know how to make it in the industry. I don't have parents in the industry. I literally had no textbook, no rule book, but I knew three things. Paramore was from Nashville, Kings of Leon was from Nashville, and Bonnaroo was in Nashville. So I was like, all right, that sounds like a good trifecta. So they're doing something right. So I that's part one of the three reasons I moved here. So to get to play it was a game changer. You know, it was surreal.
We talked about leading into talking with you guys how your motto is yes, and how important that has been for the band.
Yeah, I think if you think that you know every single, you know, answer for every single part of it, then you're really doing your music and yourself a disjustice. So I think it's important to, like, you know, surround yourself with the right people, whether that's in music or at a music festival. And then from that point forward, trust the process and just say yes to as many things, because you just never know how good something can be or can become if you go into it with more of a yes than a no.
You know, but see, that's sort of a testament to you guys, because, you know, there was not, and we talked about this a second ago, there's not been an artist that I've ever seen, at least at Bonnaroo, but frankly, anywhere, that hustles as much as you guys do or did at Bonnaroo. You said yes to everybody. You wanted to talk to everybody. You were willing to get your message out to frankly, anyone. And I always thought that was a hustle, but now that I know you guys, I think it's just who you guys are and willing to give whatever you have to the moment in which you're living in. And not letting a moment go by without maximizing the potential and what it could give you in your life.
But I think a lot of that is an attestment to the fact that we're not, Jared, what's the word you always use? We're not self-sabotaging. And so we sort of, at the end of the day, want to know that if this ever, you know, doesn't get to the places that we're trying to accomplish with it, it's not because of us. It's not because we didn't say yes, or, you know, we'll do whatever we have to do.
Yeah, and also I think, too, the music and, like, the overall just energy of the whole thing is an extension of our life, right? So so to get to go and do all these interviews, it feels just like Kristen and I get to go have conversations with friends, and we're just so lucky to get to talk about something we got to make. So I don't know. I don't know if part of it's because neither of us come from, like, you know, famous backgrounds or anything, or if it has something to just do with we're always, like, really high energy and, as the kids say, sometimes a little extra. But we always feel, like, really privileged that anyone wants to talk to us about our music. So we want to be as, like, open to that as possible. And honestly, Bonnaroo wasn't the first time we did that. We played Forecastle the year before, and we did 24 interviews in 12 hours. And then I think we went to Sloss Fest in Birmingham right after Bonnaroo, and we did something like 15 interviews in like 4 hours. So it's a great way to get our name out there, but also we just, anyone that wants to take 5-10 minutes out of their day to come talk to us and write about it, we feel like super spoiled to get to do that. And we don't want to ever take advantage of that or take that for granted.
You know, I'm sitting here listening, realizing that we've talked about how hard you guys work off stage. I don't know that we've really said it's a great show.
It's a really good show too. Yeah.
You can't just talk the game. You guys, it's a fun show. It's great music. It's a lot of fun. So, you know, for people out there listening. I don't think we've said that.
Well, thank you. Well, Rolling Stone kind of, like we said, we've never been the same band since Bonnaroo. Rolling Stone, in all the best ways, kind of fucked us because they called us Bonnaroo's most enthusiastic band. And do you realize now every single show, like if I'm sick or there's 10 people in the audience, anyone there, those 10 people are expecting Bonnaroo's most enthusiastic band.
Yeah.
They set a bar to say the least, but I think we feel ready to meet it.
Yeah. I mean, we want to reflect the energy we want to see in the audience. And so, I don't know, if you go to a show and the band doesn't seem like they're having fun, however that looks.
Yeah.
You had to cut out all the emo songs, huh? All the mopey stuff.
Well, you got to outdo yourself every single show. So, like, hey, Kristen, so last night I smashed my guitar into your keyboards. What should I do tonight? Let's set it on fire. Every night it's got to be something.
Yeah, but that kind of makes it super fun for Kristen and I and for our band. I think it makes it a little nerve-wracking for our management, but every show is a little bit different every time. I mean, we don't have like some shtick where I have like some scripted thing that I'm going to say or whatever. I don't know. It's just, we go off the cuff.
I will say, because of that, Jared is an inherently funny person. And a lot of times people don't realize how much I'm trying to not lose my shit laughing at him.
Yeah.
Because he will do things sometimes that none of us are expecting, and we can hardly hold our reactions. Yeah.
I feel just very lucky that I get paid to get laughed at by my wife on stage.
I feel that way at my job.
Who doesn't want that?
Yeah. Jared, I can't even get mine to listen to my own radio show, so you're doing okay.
I'm
saying we all get laughed at by our wives, right? It's just I get paid for it.
I feel lucky when she laughs because that means she's not going for the skillet or something because of something I've said.
So. By the way, skillet is code word for something on Barry's body, by the way.
No. It's funny to hear you say that, Kristen, because that's exactly what you said after the show here at Songbirds. You just had no idea what Jared was going to do every night, so it was always a surprise.
I started somewhat acknowledging it every now and then because I'm very transparent. You can tell exactly how I'm feeling at any point. And sometimes I just can't resist cracking up at him. So.
That's good.
Yeah. Hey, so now that we've settled the Bonnaroo thing, I gotta imagine you guys are living in a little bit of a haze right now. The past week, you released your new single. You had Billboard write a very nice article about you and the new album, the new project, and then you got your music video put on Billboard.com, and now you are looking, you know, at the next 12 months of your life, probably set in stone for you, and you're just sort of like a cog in a machine. So first off, let's talk about how excited you are about the new single. Tell me about the new album. How did it come to be? Let's just start from the beginning.
Well, we're also in a haze because we just woke up this morning and our friend Michelle Branch shared the video and how much she loved it. And that was just, it took our breath away because, like,
that's awesome.
You know, I don't know. It's just like, oh yeah, here's Michelle Branch just,
yeah,
that happened. Music, yeah. So. That happened.
Yeah, exactly. So.
He didn't feel that way when I shared it yesterday.
Yeah, I mean,
what happened?
Oh, I did. I cried.
Okay,
but not warm and fuzzy.
No,
yeah, I understand.
Yeah, I felt feelings. I felt those feelings in my skillet. You know what I mean?
Oh, nice. It's like the Matrix. It all started in a weird spot.
Hit you right in the skillet.
Yeah, exactly.
Hit you right in the skillet.
So we. Yeah, so we're really, really fucking excited for the single. It's called Hi, I'm Waiting. And, yeah, it's about, you know, it's a theme I feel like a lot of people can relate to, at least people like me. It's like feeling really longing for someone that may or may not know you exist yet. So, you know, it's just like I think it reflected similar feelings to, like, when Kristen and I met and just, you know, wanting her to fall madly in love with me because I was madly in love with her and just waiting for her to catch up.
When I think of you two and your relationship, unrequited love doesn't come into the picture.
There were about 2 months in the beginning that I thought he might be too good to be true, so I was cautiously optimistic.
Well, we joked before, you know, talking to you guys today and even back at Camp Nut Butter, how you two act like you're on your honeymoon all the time to the point where we had to make you stop.
It's a lot of giggling.
It's like being with high school kids.
It's giggling and soft, like, oh, stop it. A lot of that. Yeah.
It feels like that. I don't know, man. Like, honestly, like, I try to tell people not to use us as, like, the example, because we're weirdos. But, like, we haven't spent a night apart in 8 years.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
and
that's right.
So
we're just our own version of, like, weirdos now.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think it's normal for people to be like, I need some time alone, but we've just never felt that, and we work together.
Yeah, no, that's cool.
And I said this earlier before you guys called, but everything starts with you guys with love. The middle of the circle is love, and everything sort of surrounds that and circles that over and over. And I'm hoping that's going to be the same thread that I can't imagine. Not it's not, but I got to imagine that's the same thread that's going to tie this new project, this new album together, right?
Yeah, actually, quick story. We last time we talked to you guys on the podcast, we were about to buy our first home together. Then we came back from Bonnaroo, went on tour for 6 weeks, closed on the house, and then we came home and made a record in the middle of moving. So we would move in the middle of the night, an hour away, and then wake up at 6 a.m., feed the pets, and then head out to the studio for a 12-hour day, and then move again that night. So we did that, and then my sister-in-law came and stayed with us for about 6 weeks. She's getting ready to go to France for the summer. We hit this really weird time, just externally, you know, cars breaking down and house problems, you know, with your first home. And, like, just, like, I remember at one point I was trying to change the oil in my car, and my car broke, and I was covered in oil, and I was getting rained on. And right before I feel like really good, amazing things happen, seemingly really like difficult things happen, you know? And it was just a really hard time externally, you know, just, you know, like Mercury in retrograde kind of shit, you know?
Yeah.
And my sister-in-law, right before she left, she was watching it, you know, basically from afar. And she said, like, at one point I heard you in the other room, like practically sobbing. But then you said to Kristen, I love you. And she yelled from the other room, I love you too. And she was like, that was really sweet. That's true. I don't know. It's just like, even in our like hardest time with like whatever's going on, and this industry's not for the faint of heart. I don't know. We never lose sight of that part. So right. I think that plays a role in our music, and it only played a role in this song because originally the song, before we sent it to Patrick, was going to be about a stalker. So it didn't really reflect us at first.
Every time we try to get away from that subject, people will let us. It's like people that have their kids on a leash. They'll let you go a little bit of a distance, but if you go too far, they pull you back.
Mm-hmm.
So every time we try to go a little bit too far away from that topic, whether that's if we try to, you know, get politically charged or talk about, you know, I mean, there are plenty of songs that we have that are not about us.
Yeah.
And anytime we try to do that, people are like, okay, cool. For this next one, let's go back to, like, what makes you guys, like, the essence of you guys.
Right.
So,
at one point, Patrick Carney said to us, he said, you know what your story is. It's you guys. He's like, people want to hear that story. And I was like, are you sure? I mean, like, I mean, like, people aren't, like, sick of this, like, the big part of it. And he's like, no, that's the story. Like, stop trying to, like, make it something that it's not. So, I don't know, we just embraced it. And so I changed it from being a song about a stalker to being a song about, you know, that unrequited love in the early beginnings of, like, a relationship.
When you started writing the album and you started putting together your thoughts and what you wanted this to be, when did Patrick Carney from the Black Keys find himself in this role that he eventually became?
That was, like, 6 months before Bonnaroo. So we had actually had two of the singles recorded that are going to be coming out soon. Two singles recorded, the two songs we played at Bonnaroo, actually, that were new. We had those recorded. And so, yeah, about 6 months before Bonnaroo, he had heard some stuff of ours. He had heard about some of the shows we were playing and all of that. And he wanted to meet us. So we met, and then we did these two songs, and that turned into like a 3 a.m. text of him asking if he could do the whole record. And we got that news, I think, like the week before Bonnaroo. So we came into Bonnaroo knowing we were going to go do a whole record with him, and it was 20 12-hour days, and it was the most life-changing 20 12-hour days that we've ever spent together, and he has since become like a family member to us.
That's unbelievable. Was there a moment where you questioned any of it? Was there a moment where you said, I don't know if this is going to be right, but we're just going to trust the process and go with it?
I think the only part of it that we questioned, because, I mean, there's not a lot to question when, you know, someone like Patrick asks to work with you. There was no question in working with him, but more so a question about, we have never... This had always been sort of a self-contained songwriting operation. Jared would, you know, write the structure and a chorus, and then I would kind of, you know, edit words that felt funny or, you know, I always like to add, you know, I help make choruses big and things like that. So it always stayed between the two of us and our producer, Gregory, who had done the first two records with us. So, like, the first thing that we put out as a baby band and then our first official record with Dangerbird that we put out in 2017. So I think the process we knew was going to be totally different than anything we had ever done. We knew we were going to be writing in the studio because we had something like 22 demos, but no finished songs, whereas with the last record, we had been performing the whole record out live and then went to record it. This album was about, you know, several months before we saw ourselves trying to get into the studio. So we had plenty of material but we knew it was going to be a lot of picking through that material and working closely with someone. We were trying to just sort of psych ourselves up to be ready for that process.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and also personally, it was challenging for me because in the last record we did, Floral Canyon, I've played guitar for 15 years, and I studied guitar in college and stuff like that. So guitar has always been the thing I felt, like, set in stone about, like, really confident in my abilities. And usually vocally is where I feel, like, shaky. And so with Floral Canyon, I nailed the guitars, but it was where it was the vocals and Kristen and I's harmonies that took a lot of, like, tweaking and, you know, behind the scenes, like, you know, figuring out what, you know, is Kristen going to sing a third here or a fifth or whatever. And with this record, it was totally opposite. The vocals came super fast. I felt like Kristen and I were super in sync with the, like, singing and our harmonies. A lot of the vocals on the whole record, we sang at the same time, and I felt like you could feel that vibe and the energy. But Patrick broke down my guitars in the best way, but it made me question my ability at times, because he would tell me, you know, he would say, you're thinking of the song as a guitar player. You need to think of the song as a listener or as a songwriter.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would start to noodle, or I would overthink it, or I would try to make it like a guitar song. And he would be like, no, this needs to be a pop song. This needs to be a song for the masses, not just for the guys who, you know, read Guitar Player magazine or something. So I would take, you know, and sometimes I would take four notes, and I would be like, how about this? And I would practice it all night, and I'd show up the next day to the studio, and I'd be like, how about these four notes? It's only four notes. And he would be like, that's too many notes. It needs to be two notes. And that was a big challenge on me, because I feel like almost every day in the studio we'd go home feeling fulfilled, but I would feel exhausted and feel like, am I even a good guitarist? Like, maybe I'm overthinking it. Maybe my skill set is like not where I thought it was. But then Patrick just would keep reaffirming it. And when we would get something right, or when we would get a take that we all felt was good, he would really drive it home that was, you know, really strong and really good. And frankly, I walked out of that, I finished that record, and now I feel like I'm a better guitarist in the right way. You know what I mean?
Interesting.
Yeah.
Like, I knew scales and how to play solos going into making this record, but now I feel like I can make any record going forward thinking of it as how does the guitar best complement the rest of this record? And
I mean, and I wrote guitar parts. That's how egoless, you know, he was in the process. So
it's interesting to hear, because as part of, you know, this is what I do is my job at the paper is interview bands all the time. And the whole songwriting recording process fascinates me, because it can change from year to year, album to album, song to song. And it's interesting to hear how important a producer or letting somebody else into the process, you know? I mean, we've read about bands who changed where they recorded, you know, sometimes they'd go to an island, sometimes they'd go to a house, sometimes they'd go to somebody's basement just for a different vibe.
Right.
And just changing, I mean, it takes a lot of trust to bring somebody like Patrick or anybody to mess with your baby, basically.
It can, and it can mess with your head. It's like Patrick is so passionately obsessed with music. And frankly, we thought we had the record done in, was it 15 days?
Yeah.
And then a week went by and he called us back in. And we went back in and rewrote and re-recorded two songs on the record that we thought were done. And they're better songs now because of it. Because he obsesses over it, and until it's right, you know, it like doesn't sit well with him. And and because we say yes, like, we were like, sure, let's go back in. And I don't know how other artists do it, but we didn't want to be too precious with it. You know, we didn't want to be like, well, this is our record, or these are my lyrics, or this is my guitar part.
Like,
yeah, I mean, Patrick played guitar on it, and like, I would sing a part, and then we would end up being like, no, Kristen should sing that part. And I would write a lyric, and we'd be like, nope, scratch that lyric. Let Kristen write the lyric. Like, I think taking all the ego out of it made it something that we are most proud of, and it will make us better musicians going forward forever.
That's awesome.
I was glad to hear you. Interesting to hear you use that word precious. I'm name dropping, but I interviewed Glenn Tilbrook of Squeeze years ago. Cool. And I asked him what happened? What was it like after the world started calling him the next Lennon and McCartney? And he said, every word became too precious.
Mm. Right.
I thought, wow, that put it right, nailed it right there. But that's what can happen.
Yeah. And, we wanted to make, we didn't just want to make a repeat record with Patrick's name on it. We wanted to make the absolute best record at this chapter in our lives that we can make, And I think some people may misconstrue, especially now that Patrick's back in the limelight with that new Black Keys single, which we feel is the same way you described our song, Brad. It's like, I told Patrick it's a grower, not a shower, I was like, I said I liked it when I heard it at first, and now I love it. It's one of those things I think some people think of Patrick as maybe difficult to work with or kind of an asshole, but because we approached it ready to soak any knowledge we could like a sponge, we never experienced anything like that. He was absolutely like wise and hardworking and passionate and generous and kind, and but he also cared about the product and he cared about making this thing really good. And I guess some people could have misconstrued that, but we took it as he was passionate, and because of that, I think we bonded over that, and I think we were ready to learn, and we took it as he really feels something about this music and this record, and we were ready to push ourselves to the breaking point if we had to.
Well, that's the part that I wanted to pick up on when you said he really believes in this record. How did he find you in the first place? Now, before you answer that, I find it to be really odd listening back, knowing that Patrick did this album and knowing that information. I went back and listened to Floral Canyon and some of your other stuff. Man, there were some traces of Black Keys already in you guys. You guys already did some of the driving drum lines and the hooks stacked on top of hooks stuff already.
Yeah.
Outside of girlfriend, that was sort of you guys had that already in you. So I gotta imagine he saw a little bit of that when he heard you and said, yeah, I want to be a part of this album.
Yeah. I mean, we've both been fans of the Black Keys since the beginning. I mean, how could you not? But I mean, Jared has seen them at the Ryman and, 2011
on
the Brothers Tour and things like that. So yeah, we've always been fans, and definitely always been there.
I don't know how exactly he took notice to us, what the specific thing was. There's a rumor that he saw our Audio Tree performance, and that was one of the things that he kind of took notice of. He also, had seen kind of the year we had, by the time we started working with him, we had at least announced Bonnaroo and Floss Fest, and, we had a successful run at South by Southwest and all of that. But also, it wasn't like he wasn't both feet in right off the bat. Like we talked about with Kristen, he was cautiously hopeful or cautiously optimistic. So, we walked in the first day and just played him demos. And I probably had 50 demos in my phone. And I would play him a demo. He'd go, that's not good. That doesn't have a hook. Try something else. And I'd play him another one. And I don't know, man. I don't know if, because I grew up or I went to school for music, and I had professors that would, they cared about your ability and your skill, and because of that, they would critique things and they would be very critical at times. So I learned how to take criticism constructively. And so we did one song and we thought that was going to be it. And then he texted and was like, let's do another. And then he texted and asked our permission if we could do a whole record with him. And the whole time we were just like, are you kidding me? Like, I saw you at a sold out show at the Ryman. Like, you're one of my idols. Like, yes, of course you can. But I think because he approached it that way, I don't know, it just felt like a mutual respect. And
he said, your music's cool, but I can make it cooler. And we said,
that's awesome.
Awesome. That's pretty cool. Let's do it.
That's a great story. I love that. It doesn't fit my whole The What podcast narrative, but I like that story a lot.
That's fair. He did say at one point, he said, we played him, you know, he said, I listened to Floral Canyon, and he was like, it's good. He's like, but I want to make a record that people can take mushrooms to.
Oh, good.
It's not a psychedelic record, but it's a record that I feel like you can take and see, and then you'll see rainbows coming out of the speakers, you know.
Nice.
Well, you guys are walking rainbows, so
rainbows
that makes
unicorns.
A lot of sense. Yeah, Kristen's a unicorn, Jared's a rainbow. It just works.
Thank you. We were individually those types, so when we found each other, it felt a little bit like, you know, like an 80s movie.
Yeah, good. All right,
like,
so
pure magic and awesome soundtrack.
So first off, to wrap things up, we really appreciate you guys, not only your work, not only your time, but also as friends. We love you guys a lot, and we appreciate you guys being so important to the history of this little show, but also in our lives in general. What is the album going to be like? What can we expect? What's the release date? What's your plan for the next few months?
Okay, so the release date for the album is May 31st, and you go and pre-order that now. You can go to repeatrepeatmusic.com and pre-order that. There's also merch bundles and stuff if you want to get all that. And also, in the next month or two before May 31st, if everyone listening out there, if y'all dug High, I'm Waiting, just you fucking wait for the next three songs we have coming out before the album, because we feel like, to put it this way, High I'm Waiting is the first track off the record, and I think one of the best reviews we got from a close friend was, High I'm Waiting is great, but the album only gets better. So if y'all like High I'm Waiting, we, the band, I think Patrick, feel like the songs coming out next are only gonna be stronger rainbows and stronger unicorns of what we've done. So we're really excited about all of that. And we have some incredibly huge news that we can't share yet. But we will be sharing very soon. But
okay.
Very, very big news that I think all of the listeners and all of you guys will be very excited to hear. So stay tuned for all of that.
Boy, I have a feeling I know what this is. If I know this industry, I think I know what you're about to say. When is this little piece of information dropping?
I can't say.
Okay, you can't even say when you can say. Okay, all right.
I've already said too much.
Okay.
But the world will know probably sooner than later.
All right, here's what I'm doing, Jared. I'm writing down what I think the announcement is, and I'm showing it to Barry. Now, he's going to have to put on his reading glasses. What do you think about that? You think that's what it is,
That'd
Barry?
That'd be a good guess.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I'm writing it down. I'm putting it in the annuals of the What Podcast annual book history thing. And if I'm right, somebody's owing me a drink.
Yeah, that's fair.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's Barry owes you.
Okay. All right.
I also just want to say we made a brief 5 or 6 point list for new Bonnaroo people, new Roo goers, and some tips from us, because we just prepared not knowing what you guys would want to talk about.
Uh-huh.
Sweet.
Bonnaroo Justice.
Sweet.
So I can either send you the list or we can tell you the list.
How about the, let's do this. Is it a list that you guys have made as tips for Bonnarooians, first timers, or just in general?
Yes, Bonnarooian first timers.
Well, I have an idea. If you don't mind, let's do this. Let's wrap up this conversation and let's pick it up next week, and you can be our guest for Bonnaroo first timers, and give us your list, that specific list, next week on the What Podcast. Yeah, what do you think about that?
That's our theme for next week.
What do you think?
There you go.
That sounds perfect.
That sounds great, and we'll be probably in the midst of South by Southwest, so we'll be able to give you a fun update on that.
That's awesome.
And before we wrap, too, we just want to say to you guys, both of you, thank you guys so much for being fans and being friends and for being with us and doing that first podcast with us at a very integral point in our career.
Very excited that you wanted to do it with us, and we continue to be excited when we get to hang out with you guys.
Yes, and thank you guys for being such lovers of music and for putting out such a great podcast. I know the listeners are thankful to you guys as well, and the fans of Bonnaroo are as well. So keep it up. We'll do episodes with you whenever you want.
There are not two more charming people in all of the music industry that I've met, at least, than the kids from Repeat Repeat, Mr. Repeat, Mrs. Repeat, the entire Repeat family, of which I feel very honored to be a small part of. I feel like I'm part of the Repeat family, like one of the dogs at the house.
I agree. Yeah. I agree. They're a lot of fun, and they're very, very sweet people.
So that was a lot of fun. We're going to talk to Brandon, a paramedic, who's appeared at... who's been to a few Bonnaroos in his past, coming up here in a second. But first, we've got a little bit of homework for you, the What Podcast listener. And of course, as always, you can drop us a line, thewhatpodcast.com or the what_podcast. Drop us a line, and we'll immediately get you in for Bonnaroo tickets with camping passes. We've got GA passes to give away like we did last year. So all it takes is just dropping us a line, say hello, give us a story, give us some feedback, or... you can fulfill our homework assignment for you this week. Next week, we want to focus on Bonnaroo first-timers. Last year, we did a Bonnaroo first-timer show. We focused on Bozzy. Next week, we're going to talk to my buddies at AJR and maybe a surprise guest and maybe a Bonnaroo first-timer from last year. What I was hoping is to supplement our Bonnaroo first-timer show. Give us your advice for a Bonnaroo first-timer at thewhatpodcast.com or the what_podcast.
You know, I was thinking about that. It's changed because of the changes that the festival has done to the site with the additions of things like the store, the laundromat out there, and stuff like
flushable
that.
Flushable toilets.
Flushable toilets. You don't have to bring nearly as much as you maybe did before.
It's a good point. I found myself bringing much more garbage, goofy stuff, than stuff that's actually necessary. Like, I can't tell you the last time I really brought food.
That's exactly what I was thinking. I bring snacks, and now I plan to eat at least one meal, maybe two meals a day in Centaroo because the food is so good.
It's so good.
Go in there and buy something.
Yeah.
Get a spicy pie or a...
Yeah, and honestly, when I'm waking up in the morning, I really just don't feel like eating.
No, I don't eat a lot because obviously you don't want to spend your days in the... with flushable or not.
You're trying to position your body for the maximum right. that you can for the day.
It's better to eat mini meals or small meals throughout the day.
I do that in my regular life.
Yeah.
I mean, but, I eat a lot.
Things like that, you don't need to bring a lot of that. Water, golly, the first couple of years was that was what everybody was concerned about.
Yeah.
Bring water. Because you had to walk a half a mile or 2 miles
right.
or whatever to get ice,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it melted by the time you got it back.
Boy, that's a good question. How is the ice situation out there these days?
I don't think it's as bad. I think that's what I mean. With all the water stations that they have, I think there are more ice.
Is it still $10 a bag, though?
I have no idea. I've never... bought it. My biggest tip that I read before I ever came was buy a case of ice or bottled water and freeze it.
Yeah.
And then that becomes your ice in your cooler and
sure.
it doesn't get everything wet when mm-hmm. it melts and you drink it as you go through. That's been huge for me. That
yeah.
works great.
Yeah. So that's what we're looking for. We want your Bonnaroo tips. And you're right, Barry, but I didn't even think about that. My advice to a first timer, it was advice that I'd be giving to me as the first timer 14, 15
right.
years ago. A first timer that went for the first time last year and is doing this all for the second time is giving somebody advice this
right.
year for a first time. Totally different
totally
world.
Different world.
I didn't even think about that.
We'll hear Brandon talk about tarps. That's still legit. Tarps, shade.
Yeah.
I've told you my first year only because it was in the truck
mm-hmm.
already. The only shade I had was an umbrella.
which we strapped to a table
and then walked around or moved our chairs around it like a
sundial.
Sundial.
Yes. I just, if you've ever seen Barry Corder, Barry Corder holding a little umbrella and just traveling in a circle, like going around with the globe, is the strangest sight I've ever thought of.
I was thankful for that little patch of shade.
That's insane. All right, so that's what we're asking you to do. Drop us some Bonnaroo first-timer tips that you would give, and we'll read them next week during our Bonnaroo first-timers episode, starring AJR and some of the Bonnaroo first-timers that we're focusing on to see at the farm in 2019. But until then, let's talk to Brandon. Brandon, a paramedic, been to Bonnaroo a few times before. Our spotlight on you, the What Podcast listener. Hello, Brandon.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
For guys out there listening, Brandon is a listener who emailed us, and we've gotten so many emails and so many people happy and willing to be on the show, which is cool.
Yeah, it's a lot less work for us. It's really exciting.
But this one is not one that I would have thought of on our own, I don't think. But once you reached out, I was like, man, that's perfect. Brandon is a paramedic who volunteers, right? Is it volunteer work or are you paid?
Well, I get paid. I work in the city of Flint in Michigan here, so I get paid there, but not at the festival.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Obviously, yeah, I would hope you get paid in Flint.
Hey, sometimes it's volunteer.
My daughter worked with the volunteer program at Bonnaroo, and I was surprised to learn of all the people in the medical profession who volunteer to work there. I was surprised until she explained it, but you guys get to hang out, you get to go, but it's kind of also your reason for doing the job, right? You guys like helping people, so what better place?
Right. I volunteered at Electric Forest in 2017. And I didn't get to volunteer as a paramedic there because it was through a different company. But I still volunteered, and we did a bunch of other stuff. Like, we helped clean up the grounds, and we sat in, like, the VIP areas and ran the stores for them. It was still a pretty cool experience.
Have you ever volunteered at Bonnaroo before?
No, I have a couple of friends who volunteered at Bonnaroo, and they were all trying to convince me to go to Electric Forest, which is about 2.5 hours from up here in Michigan.
Yeah.
I didn't really want to because I'm not into EDM as much as I am now at that point in my life.
Yeah.
And they just convinced me to volunteer because it was basically a free ticket, and I went and I ended up loving all the music there and the ground, so it was awesome.
Yeah, Barry's daughter being a volunteer coordinator, and then me having friends that actually volunteered, and then the third level of it when we talked to Paul Janeway last year about his festival experience as a volunteer, it sounds like just a really difficult life. I don't know how Electric Forest does it, but Bonnaroo does you 12 hours on, 12 hours off, and then you got to do that for a series of, you know, I guess 3 or 4 days, and then you're there the whole week before. Is that pretty much how Electric Forest worked?
Well, it's the same company. It's like Workforce Exchange, or WET is what they call themselves. Yeah, Bonnaroo is different. I know when my friends did Bonnaroo, they had to go like 3 or 4 days before and to help set up, and they got to leave. And then, but at Electric Forest, it wasn't like that. We got 3 8-hour shifts. You could specify who you wanted to see, and they'd try to work around your schedule.
Right.
And so we got 3 shifts that were 8 hours. And luckily for us, they were all between like noon and eight. And in Michigan, it's like, you know, 80 degrees at that point in the year. So it really wasn't too terrible.
It doesn't sound terrible. That's the problem.
Right.
It doesn't sound terrible. Right. It sounds perfectly logical, especially when you're telling a kid who doesn't have much money that they can go for free when they're 19, 20 years old. And then when you're actually doing it in the Tennessee heat, it's pretty terrible.
And then you have a guy pee down your back.
They tried to convince me to volunteer at Bonnaroo in 2015, and I said, absolutely not. I'd rather just pay because I'm not going to sweat for, you know, 4 days extra. No thanks.
So what was your overall impressions, not from just the volunteer aspect, your overall impressions of Electric Forest versus Bonnaroo?
Electric Forest is amazing. The grounds are awesome, which is, like, Bonnaroo's doing the Where in the Woods this year, so I'm really excited to see that, to see how it compares to Electric Forest, because Electric Forest is just, it's huge. Like, there's, like, I think they said, like, a 12-acre forest that there's, like, a couple stages in there, and you can literally get lost in it. It's pretty cool, especially if they had the music that Bonnaroo has. I think I'd go every year, but I like the Bonnaroo music way more, and it's just a lot more fun at Bonnaroo, if you ask me.
Just quickly, the volunteer sort of thing. Were there pluses? What was the advantage to doing it?
Besides for the free ticket, I mean, that was probably about it. It was, at Richard Ford, they kind of put us out in the middle of nowhere to camp. We couldn't actually camp at GA, which kind of stink. But other than being able to go to the festival for free and then, you know, being able to, I guess, to help her out and see the behind the scenes stuff, that was about the only two good aspects of it. I'd rather pay every year.
When you come to Bonnaroo, you come with a group?
Me and a couple buddies here from Michigan have gone the years past, 2014, 15, and then in 18, then we're coming back, obviously, in 19. And then this year, we have a toss-up. We have a group that we met last year that are all doing group camping, and I would like to do group camping, but my other friends want to stay in GA. We got lucky. We were in Pod 2 or Plaza 2 last year.
At some point, you transitioned from going to just Bonnaroo as a patron and then into a volunteer paramedic?
Yeah, did you? Maybe I misunderstood that, Brandon. Have you done the volunteer paramedic at either of the festivals?
No, I haven't. But what I was telling you guys was that it's just, usually when I go there, like, I usually bring my bed bag just in case if anything happens.
Yeah.
But I also try to do a good job of looking out for people who might be having too much fun and, you know, who are running around and look like they might need a water or, you know, back at camp, I usually bring like an IV start kit just in case if somebody's dehydrated around us that needs some help. And luckily for me, with my medical license, I get to carry a specific drug called Narcan that will, you know, that will bring somebody back if they decided.
Hang on a second. Let me write that down. Narcan. Pick one of those up on the way.
You know, I was thinking, I don't know if Brad was in our camp when this happened, but it was one of those other moments that reminded me what's different about this festival. The kid that got so high, was it 2 years ago, and ran across the freeway and didn't make it back. He got hit by a semi-truck. And one of the guys in our camp looked at the rest of us and said, that's his buddy's fault. And that's everybody else's fault around him that they didn't take care of him. The guy was over-partying or whatever, you know, and made a mistake. But it's that Bonnaroo mentality of take care of your neighbors and friends.
Well, yeah, that is exactly what you seem to walk and talk, Brandon. That specific case, though, I can't imagine that being, if something like that happened to us, I can't imagine that being your fault or my fault. When we say look out for each other, yeah, we look out for each other, those who are struggling, but we can't also make their decisions for them.
No. You know? I think it was more the kid had made a bad decision, so, you know, we as a community should step up and take care of him.
Sure.
Is the way I interpret it.
Sure, we see that anytime somebody, like, falls apart in the middle of the pit at the what, right?
Right.
You know somebody's going to be pointing, and I can't remember the show that this happened, but I'll never forget the way that the crowd reacted when a girl next to me fainted, and literally all of us screamed, like, hey, oh yeah. My God, this was in the middle of the day, and even the guy on the stage was like, hey,
right.
she needs help, and then that's when the medic just ran straight towards her, and we all just, like, picked her up and handed it to him. I don't know what happened to her. I'm guessing she just got dehydrated, but that's the looking out for each other thing that we absolutely, absolutely love and adore about this festival.
Yeah, it happens all the time out in GA, too. I mean, like, last year we were at Kellett, and I was with one of my friends, and they obviously know that I'm a paramedic, and probably two or three rows ahead of us, or two or three heads ahead of us, some girl fell, and they started yelling for it. My buddy starts yelling, like, watch out, my friend's a paramedic, he'll come and help her, which I always do, you know, if I always see something like that, or some guy laying in the field in the middle of, you know, the day when it's 98 degrees, then, you know, I always go up to them and make sure that they're okay, at least if I get there before the other people, they have that first line of care, you know, a little bit sooner.
Yeah, and you know what's crazy about that? Think about if you're somebody like you who's always on the lookout making sure that others are okay, that's really got to change your experience going to the festival as well. You can't necessarily let yourself go, lose yourself in a moment because your eyes are always looking and your head's always on a swivel.
Right, yeah. I mean, I always look for it. I mean, I still have my fun. But, you know, just, I don't know. I've always been like that, watching out for people who just need help. And it's, I don't know, that's just a perspective that I like to bring to Bonnaroo is that, and I hope that other people who are first responders do, is that they, you know, look out for that kind of stuff and they can help people when they need it.
I've seen it in big examples and small ones where people, you can't ever tell on that Friday, Saturday, or Sunday morning when people are asleep in Centaroo, you know, are they passed out? Are they having a trouble, or did they just fall asleep? But, it always seems like somebody's sort of checking on him.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, there is always those moments of, I'm not too sure about him.
Yeah.
Like the story I told a couple of weeks ago on the show that, you know, a guy that camped with us went to the gore show, came back in the morning covered in the gore blood, and the medics thought that it was his blood. They rushed right over to him, tackled him, and took him to the medical tent.
Yeah.
He wasn't, there's nothing wrong with him. He just was covered in gore blood.
Yeah, and I'm sure there are poor people who fall asleep and keep getting awakened. Are you okay? You know?
I just wanted a nap, guys. Let me take a nap.
And there are those people who sleep in Centaroo because they lost their wristband or whatever and can't go back in and out, so they just sleep there. But I just think that's a big, big part of the festival is that take care of each other sort of mentality.
And it's like that nowhere else. I really don't think it's like that anywhere else. Now, we've talked a lot about, you know, how identity plays a big part in each festival, but the thing about Bonnaroo is that exact thing. I love hangout, and I love shaky knees. I'm not going to be taken care of by the fellow festival attendees like I will be at Bonnaroo.
The culture at Electric Forest was similar to Bonnaroo, but not as, you know, they don't go around saying Happy Forest at Electric Forest, not that I've seen it when I was there, but at Bonnaroo we all say, you know, Happy Roo or whatever.
Right.
And I went to Mopop in Detroit, which is a city festival, and that was more fun than I thought it was, but it's still not the same as Bonnaroo.
I don't even know what that is. I don't know what that is.
It's super small. It's indie rock like this year.
Yeah.
Last year was Bon Iver and Portugal the Man. This year they got Tame Impala and Vampire Weekend. And there was lots of other ones too.
Your first Bonnaroo 2014, you went back in 15, you missed 16 and 17, and then you found yourself back on the farm last year. I love this conversation, and I know Barry will ask you the same question. From 14 to 18, what were the big differences that you saw?
Just the accessibility of the festival. Like, you guys remember, 14 and 15 we went, I mean, there was nothing but porta potties and limited showers and limited bathrooms. And now I feel like, I don't know if we got lucky at pod two, but, you know, I feel like that there's a lot more actual bathrooms and not porta potties there. I feel like it's a little bit easier to take a shower. I feel like it's just a better experience overall. I mean, I don't know, we had to rough it out those first 2 years that we weren't.
Oh, yeah. You think that's roughing? How about 2004, pal?
Yeah, let's go
How
back.
About 2004?
Yeah.
All right.
Let's go back.
Yeah. You think that's roughing, boy, do I have a story about Dead and Company for you.
Yeah, it was more pleasant on the moon.
Yeah.
You got to remember, for us in Michigan, it doesn't get anything above maybe 95 or 90. Five times a year. So when we go down there like that in 2015, I think the coldest, quote unquote, was like 95 degrees, and we were struggling big time.
Yeah. How did you make the, so when you went 14 and you felt what it actually was and how this whole machine works, how did you then prepare for 15? So you were a first timer in 14. How did you change your mind
and make things better
for you in 15?
I think we brought a couple more tarps to kind of put up around our canopy. And then in 14, we didn't think about it. We didn't fill up our gas tank before we went in. So we only had limited AC. So I know in 15, we filled up both of our cars that we drove down, make sure we had a full tank of gas. And, you know, we just basically sleep until the sun swept us out of our tent and then go into the car and try and sleep for a little bit longer.
I never even thought about that. That is a really good point. Fill your gas tank before you get in. Now, they won't let you bring a spare tank of gas, will they?
No, they take that, and that's a great point, not just for the AC, but you might be sitting in line for 6, 7, 8 hours, depending on when you get there. So you better get that tank of gas before you.
Most people
coming from our direction, they hit it on top of Mont Eagle. They hit that gas station right on the top.
Stop it. Stop it, Barry. Stop telling our secrets.
It's the last one.
Stop what you're doing right now. There are certain things that we keep a secret. Do not say that.
Well, we're going early. It won't matter.
Those little tricks that you find along the way. So more tarps, fill up the gas tank. What else? Which, by the way, let me say something about the tarps. As somebody who is not a handyman, you can tell me that we need to get more tarps, more tarps, more tarps. But tarps don't matter unless you know how to tie the damn things.
Yeah, yeah.
Unless you know how to pull slack and actually get water to run thing. These tarps don't work. Here's what I suggest you do. Find a guy like Brandon, who's a medic. Find a guy with some handy skills. And find somebody who can hang a damn tarp. Because it ain't me.
Well, we've told the story, Brandon, and I'm going to let you finish answering because I want to ask what you would recommend bringing from your professional point of view, too. But we've told the story before, but every time I think of tarps, last year on that Sunday morning when it rained, we sat around dealing with tarps.
Chasing rain, chasing puddles.
And one of our campmates had a tarp over his tent at the exact instant that a lightning bolt hit a transformer. that tarp collapsed on his tent.
Right on top of him as he was asleep. I mean, he was trying to sleep through the storm. Yeah. Lightning bolt hits. His tarp collapses. Water drenches his entire campsite. Yeah. It was the best.
We laugh and say he basically was birthed out of that little tent because he came out of there. I'm convinced he was going to see nothing but angels. It was pretty funny.
Yeah. The sight of a guy who's soaking wet coming
convinced he's dead.
He looked like Ace Ventura 2 coming out of that back of the rhinoceros, man. It was just the strangest thing in the world. Eyes wide open, thought he had been struck by lightning. It was just the best.
Professionally, what do you see, you know, just observationally that people don't bring or don't do to take care of themselves? Drinking enough water, I would think, would be right at the top.
Yeah, I mean, professionally, you just got to take it easy. I mean, you got 4 days or 5 days, depending on, like, we show up on Wednesday morning. So you got 5 days to have fun. Just relax. Just try to get through the heat and just, you know, drink as much water as you can eat. I noticed a lot of people don't eat, especially myself. And just try and stay cool, especially, like I said, if you're from up north like we are and it doesn't get that hot, you just got to stay cool and make sure that you're, you know, we got electrolytes and just do the thing, you know. Don't try and get too messed up at 3 o'clock in the afternoon when it's 98 degrees.
Yeah, pace yourself. Right?
Yeah, it's good pacing.
Don't blow yourself out.
Okay, well, that brings me to a rookie question, and I will say this. By the way, we'll do a Bonnaroo First Timer episode, and in Bonnaroo First Timer, I'd love to go through some of the rookie mistakes that we make and talk about some of the things. So if you have a rookie mistake that you've made or a rookie mistake that you've seen, send it to us at thewhatpodcast.com or the_what_podcast, and we'll feature some next week. But I will say this first and foremost. I've got a two-parter. One, never, 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 never get drunk at Bonnaroo, ever. You can get a little bit.
Yeah.
Never get obliterated, because there's nothing that will feel worse to you than a hangover in
Absolutely.
When you wake up and it's 95 degrees. There is no relief from that. It does not get better from
there's
there.
There's nowhere to go.
There's nowhere to go from hangover at 95 degrees. Don't get drunk at Bonnaroo.
And if you think you want to, just consider this. Porta potty.
Yes. Okay, that's my first part. Second part, if you decide that, maybe you stumble in to a drunk night at Bonnaroo and you are hungover, what is your hangover remedy as a trained professional, Brandon?
Good question. Well, luckily for me, I have banana bags that if I'm really that hungover, I can just start an IV on myself and let it run. So that gets it pretty quick. But...
Oh, wait, so your banana bag, you mean that like an IV?
Yeah, it's like an IV. It's yellow. That's how we call it. Banana.
How can I pick up some more of my own IVs?
That's a pro tip right there.
Is that available at Dick's? Can I get that?
Hey, I got a stack of them. If you run into some trouble there, just get a hold of me. I'll come and help you guys out.
Wow.
That is
right.
A pro tip.
That
right
is
there.
A pro tip. Find somebody who can give you an IV.
A banana bag.
Jesus. As long as it doesn't come in glass, I think they're going to let you bring it in.
That's hardcore.
All right,
no,
so,
it's plastic. That's it.
All right, so if I'm not privy to said banana bag, how am I curing my hangover, Brandon?
Air conditioning, water, Gatorade, sleep, food. I don't know. It's 95 degrees. That sounds absolutely miserable. Yes. I take your advice exactly where, you know, I go at night. Maybe I'll have, you know, I get to a decent point, but stay away from the liquor. Try and just drink beer and just... Don't get too crazy. That sounds miserable being that hungover. Yeah.
They took away, Brad, the best thing.
Mm.
Our favorite. I mean, it was there that one year for me. Poutine.
Yeah.
Has to be a great hangover
if you thought,
remedy.
Now, look, the poutine was amazing, but if you think that was doing me better after a hangover, you are out of your mind.
Wow.
If you think
that
I should.
Perfect.
Yeah, let me put on a weak stomach some gravy from Canada and
Absolutely.
Some fries.
Absolutely. Some
Oof.
Good greasy.
All right. There you go. All right. Well, Brandon, we really appreciate you calling. We appreciate you listening. And
let's ask him who he's looking forward to seeing.
Oh, yeah, it's a good point. Yeah, we always go through this. I forgot. Whenever we try to talk to podcast listeners and Bonnaroovians, we like to get your picks for the year. So who are you looking forward to this year?
Well, this is a weird year for me because I've actually seen a lot of the people on the lineup. But I'm really excited to see the Avett brothers again. I have not seen the Lumineers, and they don't tour very often, so I'm really excited to see them. Really excited. I know you guys have talked about it. Hippocampus, I just discovered them maybe 3 weeks ago, and I am so pumped to see them. you know, Grizz is who I remember. He's from Michigan, and I'm really glad to see him there. And Max Marco is another good one. Catfish in the Bottom, and all those kids.
You have other people from Michigan coming with you?
Yeah, I think there's going to be three or four of us from Michigan, and then the group that is getting together. I know they're from everywhere. There's a couple guys from California, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas. They're from everywhere.
You're not driving, though, are you? Are you flying?
Oh, we're driving.
Nice. Very nice. What's your transport? What's your mode of transport? What do you got?
Well, I actually just bought a new car a few weeks ago, and I kept Bonnaroo in mind, and I switched from a Buick LaCrosse, and then I bought a Chevy Equinox, so that's the hatchback. And my buddy Wes, he said, he's seen the new car, and he was like, oh, this is the perfect car to take to Bonnaroo. I was like, yep, funny. You know, I kept that in mind.
I will tell you that when we bought the car that I have now, a GTI, I mean, I was in love with it, and I was going to buy this car, but the first thing that I stopped myself, when I really came to after I fell in love and took it on a few dates, and I tried to, you know, reset myself, I looked over and said, is this car going to be okay for Bonnaroo?
Yeah.
It was the first time I had even had a doubt about the vehicle I was purchasing,
so
and it had something to do with Bonnaroo.
You're considering vehicles based on Bonnaroo. That tells us how far we've come. And I'll never forget, Brandon, I went over to Caravan up with them 1 year, and they literally could not fit a hula hoop into the
I needed Barry to come by and get this hula hoop off my hands because I just couldn't squeeze it one more thing in.
We did that in 2015. We drove my 2011 Chevy Malibu, and there was three guys, and it was so packed. And then obviously after 5 days of being there and one shower, maybe the car ride back did not smell so good.
Yo, that's the other, you know, tip I'm gonna maybe mention, make a note of it for next week. But if you, whatever you think that you've packed into the car when you're leaving the house, reduce it by 20% because that shit ain't getting back in the same way. That's not getting back in the same way.
That's why we have, is it Gearheads? Is that the company here?
Yeah, here in Chattanooga, yeah.
Gearhead. We're an hour away, Brandon, and people like you, that Sunday or Monday morning, it's like, no, it can just stay here.
Yeah.
They're not going back in the car. And so they go and collect it and then resell it. It goes to a lot of social programs.
There you go.
But we pack everything up, and it's about 9.5 hours down there without any stops. So that's
I didn't even think about
the long stinky ride home.
I didn't even think about that part.
That's a big drive. That's a big drive because I'll tell you, there's no shorter drive in the world than getting to Bonnaroo, and we live 45 minutes away.
Yeah, it's really.
There's no longer drive in the world than getting home from Bonnaroo.
Well, 9 hours, that's what was bad. We came next to these people in 2015 that were from Maine, and you think, oh, East Coast, it's got to be, you know, 10, 12, maybe 15 hours at the most. They were 26 hours away. I could never do that.
I love it.
No,
I love it so much.
They do it all the time. But yeah, you know, we were talking about the heat. A lot of people who don't have the kind of humidity that we have, they need to count on that. It is unbelievable.
Yeah,
it's hot for us.
It's the only place that I can tell you it's like, the only people who would be comfortable in this would be somebody that maybe came from the bayou.
The Amazon forest.
So, something around the Delta. This seems comfortable to them. Other than that, this is going to be rough for you. Well, Brandon, thank you so much for talking to us, and hopefully we'll see you on the farm, all right? Bring a banana bag for me. Put my name on it.
Yes, absolutely. I'll see you guys today.
Thanks, buddy. Thanks. See you soon. As sad as it is, everything that starts must also end. Repeat, repeat. Brandon, Barry Corder, Brad, an exceptional day here on the What Podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. And of course, follow along the What_podcast on Twitter or the whatpodcast.com.
We're down to double digits.
Isn't it nuts? Like, we've got less than 100 days left until Bonnaroo. And before we go, I wanted to mention something that Rubus dropped a line on from Twitter. And I didn't want to bring this up, but he did. And I thought it was a very valid point. This past week, we celebrated International Women's Day, and Rubus made a very good point. Dear AC Entertainment, in all of the years Bonnaroo has existed, you have not had a female headliner.
Wow.
That hit me like a ton of bricks. So, with that being said, of the AC Entertainment people that listen, let's try to do something about that next year.
Oh, wow. I hadn't thought about that.
I know we got the Brandi Carlisles. I know we got the Kacey Musgraves. I know we got the Cardi B's. And I don't think there's anybody doing it on purpose. Right, they're not that kind of group. They're not that kind of people. But it is something that is going to start being very apparent if we keep going some more years about this.
There's all kinds of programs within Centaroo and stuff like that that they do.
They do a ton. But it does look strange.
Yeah. No, I hadn't thought of it. I
didn't either. That's why I wanted to mention it here at the end. I don't really have any commentary on it, but it would be nice. It would be nice. And you know, the names are aplenty. The Lady Gagas, the Beyoncés, the Dolly Partons.
We gave them Dolly. We gave you gold.
Yes. I know you hadn't thought of that before.
Right.
So thank you to Jared. Thank you to Kristen. Thank you to their whole Repeat family. The new album in stores, on your computer, in your phone, in a matter of weeks. The new single, Hi, I'm Waiting. Go check it out. Thank you to Brandon. Thank you to you, the podcast listener. We'll talk to you next week. Bonnaroo First Timers.
Hey. How y'all feeling?
Journey through the stories that define the artists playing Bonnaroo. Who are they? What are they? What will you see? The what? Which bands? This year? That matter.
Yay.
With Brad Steiner and Barry Corder.
Are we exposed? Security teams ask this every day. Vulnerabilities across network, cloud, AI, and OT silos hide the truth, and attackers are watching. Tenable unifies your tools, teams, and data so you can spot and close risks fast. Tenable's AI-powered exposure management gives teams one view of risk, helping them focus, take action, and close critical exposures fast. Visit Tenable.com. Tenable. Your exposure ends here.